Yeah, so I'll talk about matching of the hydron temperature and eddy CFT, and this is based on work done with Marta Orselli from Nodita, and it's published, or at least the preprints are these two preprint numbers. The motivation for this work, well, there are several possible motivations, but one of them that, the one that made us interested in this is the following. So if you look at the thermodynamics of N equal 4 super young nodes on a free sphere, then this is a very interesting thermodynamics to study. There's some nice features. Yeah, first I should say we want to look at the planar limit. So we take n to be large, or for the most part to be infinite. But the tooth coupling for n equal 4 doesn't run, so because n equal 4 is finite. So we can just fix the tooth coupling to whatever we like it to be. So why is this interesting? If you look at the weak tooth coupling, then it's well known that there's a critical temperature which roughly is 1 hour the radius of the three sphere. And at that temperature, there's a phase transition. So for temperatures less than this critical temperature, the free energy is of order one. And for temperatures larger than TH, the free energy is of order n squared. So there's something going on there that looks a bit like a confinement, deconfinement transition. And in fact, there's many other things about it that looks like a confinement, deconfinement transition. That's not what I will talk about. Yes?
Is there a phase in which it goes in between the pole and n?
No, not that I'm aware of, no.
Only if you have to tell on some parking station values?
I mean, you can approach this temperature, and then you can see that, you can then study how it approaches this temperature, but it looks, I mean, the free energy works like an order parameter, so if you would divide the free energy with n squared, then it would be zero below TH and non-zero above TH. So it doesn't really seem like there's any other phase, no. Okay, so this transition I will not really talk about today, but this critical temperature is what I will talk about, because this critical temperature also resembles a Hagedorn temperature, because in the gauge theory, there is a Hagedorn density of states. So the density of states has this form, actually, for temperatures below, for high energies. Okay, this is a little bit misleading, but for high energies, it has this form, the density of states. Then finally, there's another reason why this is interesting, and that is ADS CFT, because this gauge theory, namely n equal 4 superangles on a free sphere, is dual, or at least believed to be dual, to type 2B string theory and ADS 5 process 5. And part of the ADS CFT dictionary is that the string tension is equal to square root of the tooth coupling. The natural conjecture is then that the Hagedorn temperature that is this critical temperature in the gauge theory is dual to a Hagedorn temperature of string theory on ADS 5 versus 5. So it's therefore very natural to ask, is it possible to match the Hagedorn temperature in ADS CFT? Can you match it on the gauge theory and string theory sides? And if you look at the gauge theory first, then you can compute the Hagedorn temperature for small tooth coupling This has been done for the free ferry, and it's also been, there's also been computed a one loop correction. On the string theory side, it's hard because there's no known first quantization of strings, so maybe it's 5 plus 5. But on the PP wave background, you can actually compute the Hagerup temperature. And this corresponds to strings on radius 5 plus 5 with a large R charge. So this gives some hope that maybe you can match to the Gibbs theory. However, there's one big problem with that, and that is the matching of the spectra in the Gibbs theory and PP wave correspondence requires large tooth coupling, as I will show on the next slide. So seemingly, you can conclude that there's no possibility of match of the Hagerup temperature. And let me explain why you have to have large tooth coupling to match the spectrum in the gauge theory PP wave correspondence. So if you consider the gauge theory PP wave correspondence of Berenstein, Malvasema, and Nastase, let's take set and X to be two complex scalars, then we consider these three operators. So the first one is very special because it's a chiral primary of n equal 4. So this naturally survives the limit of going to large tooth coupling. The next one is conjectured to decouple from the spectrum when we take the large tooth coupling limit. While the last one is what is called near BPS and should also survive the limit. However, all of these three operators are present for small tooth coupling. They all have the same quantum numbers, and they almost have the same energy. Like for the free theory, it's completely the same, and say to one loop, it's just a small perturbation. So these for small tooth coupling, these operators are a lot like each other, but for large tooth coupling, it's conjectured that only two of them survive and the third one decouples. So this means that you cannot really hope to match the spectrum between weakly coupled gauge theory and the PP wave for this reason, because there are these unwanted states which you can only decouple by taking the last tooth coupling limit. And I mean, I should say that I believe there's many more unwanted states than the states you actually want in the theory. So most of the states should actually decouple in the large tooth coupling level. So for this reason, the matching of the Hagerup temperature in AFC CFT does not really seem possible. The idea is to find a new way to match gauge theory and string theory, or at least in a new regime, I should say. So what do we do? We consider n equal 4 on a free sphere with non-zero chemical potentials for the R charges. And this is the general position function in the Gram canonical ensemble. Then we consider the special case where two of the chemical potentials are equal while the last one is zero, and then we can rewrite the partition function like this. So in the free theory, this gives a diagram of the Hagerup temperature which is like T versus omega. So on this critical line here, you have the Hagerup temperature of the theory. So for each value of omega, you have a different Hagedorn temperature. But the interesting region is this up here, where there's a critical point of this critical value of omega. And what we're interested in is to go so close to this point and see what happens. So, in summary, we find that in this particular limit where we go near this critical point, the partition function of the whole n equal 4 on a free sphere reduces essentially to the partition function of the ferromagnetic Heisenberg spin chain. So this is how n equal 4 behaves near this point. You cannot say then that this limit really is like a decoupling limit of the Heisenberg chain in n equal 4. And I'll come back to how this works, but let me first comment on how this should help with our problem. And the way it helps is that if you can look at this coupling up here, so this is the lambda tilde is defined as the tooth coupling divided with 1 minus omega. And when this lambda tilde is large, we find that only states close to the primaries of the so-called SU2 sector contributes to the partition function. And this precisely gives us a mechanism to get rid of the unwanted states, even though we are in weakly coupled Langmuir spheres. So this opens up a possibility of matching the spectra and thereby also the Hagedorn temperature. Yeah.
If I understand right, the XXM model is a completely isotopic model in three directions. And you set the condition that the two directions are different than the third. You have understand one of this?
Sorry, which two directions is that?
In the previous slide, you took one of the values.
I see. Yeah, but I mean, the how can you say the Heisenberg model does not see the other directions, you can say, so it's not aware that you can choose other directions. But in fact, we're working on a different limit, on a slightly different limit, where you get the Heisenberg model with a magnetic field. So. So maybe the answer to your question is that the way you can modify it is by putting a magnetic field, then you can see other directions as well.
Sorry, can you also remind me that on your free diagram, at let's say zero temperature, there is a certain critical value of the chemical potential. So is it because you have a theory in a compact space that this critical value is not zero? Because in normal theory, once you add chemical potential...
Yeah, yeah, I mean, this is all normalized in units of the radius of the free sphere, yeah.
So this is because you have a compact space.
Yeah, exactly.
So if you unwrap it, it goes to zero.
Yeah. Okay, so the plan...
On the previous question, so if you were to choose the same chemical potentials, what would we know what the partition function would look like? Not just choose the same for two and for the third charge, setting it to zero, but choosing the same chemical potential.
You're saying like if you have three being equal?
Yeah.
So yeah, I'll come back to that. Okay. That'd be also certain. Okay, so the plan for today. Well, I went through the motivation, so first I'll talk about the gauge theory side and go through some of the basic stuff, and then go on with the free theory and the interacting theory, and then this decoupling limit, and then finally talk about what you can get from looking at the Heisenberg chain in terms of the gauge theory. And then after that I'll go to the string theory and the matching of the spectra and Hagedorn temperature. Okay, so let's start with some basic stuff. So this is my general partition function in the grand canonical ensembles, where you have chemical potentials. So here D is the dilatation operator. J1, 2, and 3 are the three R charges for the SU4R symmetry of N equal 4. Omega 1, 2, and 3 are the corresponding chemical potentials. Then we use the state operator correspondence relating a state on the CFT on S3 to an operator for the CFT on R4. Then you map the energy and scaling dimensions, and the gate singlets are mapped to the gate invariant operators. This last part is important because when you work on the S3, you can only work in terms of gauge singlets because the flux lines on S3 cannot escape. So you can only look at states which are singlets. Should also say that we put the radius of S3 to 1. So the energy is really equal to the scaling dimension. Then we will be talking about the set of gauge invariant operators which are given by linear combinations of all the multi-trace operators. Most of my talk, if not all, I'll talk about the planar limits where you have n equal infinity. As is well known, we have large n factorization, so the traces do not mix, and this means that we can look at just the single trace sector. So therefore you can study the whole theory by just studying the single trace partition function.
So this assumes that J must be more than N.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, also the energy is much more than N squared.
It doesn't have to be maximum, it's just
has to be smaller than root N.
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah, so we don't know what happens if we go close to that. Okay, so then we introduce this x, which is e to the minus beta, and yi, it is e to the beta omega I, because then we can write the whole single trace partition function for the like this. This is just a shorthand notation. And the multi-trace partition function is then that where omega is equal to e to the 2 pi I. So you should remember all the definitions in the rest of the talk. The free theory. So here we put the tooth coupling to 0, and then the dilatation operator is just the bare scaling dimension. We want to compute the single trace partition functions, and the single trace operators look like this, where A is the set of letters of N equal 4, and those you can find, it's very well known, and they transform in the R symmetry SU4 under these representations here. And then there's all the descendants using the covariant derivative. So using all that, you can compute the letter partition function, which is just the partition function for a single element in this set here. And that gives this mess here. Then using the letter partition function, you can compute the single trace partition function like this. Finally, you can get the whole multi-trace partition function like that. So this is the partition function for free planar n equal 4 on a free sphere. You can see that something happens if the letter partition function becomes equal to 1. Then the partition function has a singularity. And this is, in fact, precisely the Hagedorn singularity. So this, the letter partition from k equal to 1 defines the Hagedorn temperature for given chemical potential. So we get, in general, TH as a function of omega 1, 2, and 3. Then we look at some special cases. So the first special case is where we just turn on one chemical potential, then we get a curve like this. And you can notice that it's flat here. But if we instead look at the two other cases where 2 and 3 of the chemical potentials are turned on and equal, then we get some curve which is non-zero, with non-zero slope. So in fact, here for this one, the slope is 1 over, oh sorry, the slope is minus log 2, and here it's minus log 4. If in particular, let's consider this case here, where we have two chemical potentials turned on, and then let's look at what happens if we take omega to go to 1. So we see immediately that it's pretty natural to take also the temperatures as 0 when we want to look at that. So if we try this limit here, we can see that in this limit we can define an effective temperature such that this effective the Hagedorn temperature in terms of this effective temperature is 1 over log 2. And why is that nice? So then we should take the limit of the partition function also. So if we look at the letter partition function, then you can see that if we define this x tilde to be x times y, to be fixed in this limit here, since x goes to 0 and y goes to infinity. So if we define this x tilde here, then the whole letter partition function reduces to 2 times x tilde. And this is precisely the partition function for two complex scalars. And this is also what is called the SU2 sector. So when you take this limit, the whole partition function reduces to the partition function for the SU2 sector. And in terms of simple trace operators, the SU2 sector corresponds to trace of a trace like this, where each element can be either Z or X, where Z and X are these two scalars here. So in this limit, for the free theory, everything reduces to the partition function of the SU2 sector. And it's very easy to see that the Hagedorn temperature for the SU2 sector is 1 over log 2. So that's precisely corresponding to what we found before by looking at the diagram for the Hagedorn temperature. Then you can also look at the two other cases. The first case here, where there's one of the chemical potential turned on, is pretty simple because that reduces just to one scalar, and there's not any Hagedorn temperature anymore. The other case, where there's three chemical potentials turned on, are more interesting because that gives three complex scalars and two complex fermions. And this is, in fact, the so-called SU2-3 sector of n equal 4. So it seems like something interesting is going on in the theory when you take these types of limits. But of course, this is all for the free theory. So in order to really say something about n equal 4, we should put on the coupling. Let's study what happens if you have a non-zero tooth coupling. We take again this general partition function where we have put two of the omegas equal and the last one zero. So if we look at the dilatation operator, then we can in general expand it like this in terms of the tooth problem. And if we then look at the weight factor, which we trace over here, it's easy to see we can rewrite it like this using this dilatation operator here.
Why do you have lambda 3 half?
That's special terms which interchange two fermions with three bosons. Yeah, it's something that doesn't occur if you only have bosons. So like in the issue 2 sector, it's not present, for example. So we can write it like this. The first term here, you see that since, yeah, so we're going to look at this region here with small temperatures, 1 minus omega small and lambda small. So the first term here we see will be very large since beta is very large, unless P0 is equal to J. If it's large, of course, then it means that the state we are looking at would decouple. So this forces us to only look at states which P0 equal to J. And that is, in fact, the same as said. This is precisely the mechanism that truncates to states with in the SU2 sector, since the SU2 sector in this case corresponds to P0 equal J.
All of them are
BPS,
or some of them are near BPS?
No, they're not at all BPS. There's only very, very few that are BPS. There's a lot more states than the BPS states, and also more than the near BPS states. So this term here tells us that we will truncate to the SU2 sector. Then, in order to have finite contributions in this region, we also need that 1 minus omega is small, because then we'll get contributions from this term. Otherwise, this would also go to infinity. And then furthermore, we have these interaction terms. So what happens is that the partition function in the end becomes like this, where now we trace only over the SU2 sector. We then define an effective temperature, which is beta tilde is equal to beta times 1 minus omega. And we define an effective coupling, which is lambda tilde equal to lambda over 1 minus omega. And then we can write the Hamiltonian here like this. So this is really a Hamiltonian for the SU2 sector, because we only trace over the states in the SU2 sector. All the other states, for all the other states, this weight factor is very large, and we can effectively throw them away to a very good approximation. I should also say that you don't really have to take large n here. You can do this for a finite n also. The point of this is that this is really how n equal 4 superangles on a free sphere behaves near this critical point with zero temperature and the two chemical potentials being the critical value. But we can go further than this and take a decoupling limit. So we consider the limit where we take temperature going to 0, omega going to 1, and the tooth coupling going to 0. And then we have the same definitions for T tilde and lambda tilde before. So using the analysis that I just showed you, where we now really take lambda to go to zero, you find that the whole partition function becomes like this, where the Hamiltonian is now d0 plus lambda tilde d2. So if we compare to what we had before, we can see here that the d term drops away because lambda is going to zero. So there's a truncation of the Hamiltonian, and all these higher terms that we had before truncate just to having the one, just to the one loop term. A nice feature is that this lambda tilde does not have to be small, since I mean it can also be large if you want, or finite for that matter. So this partition function really, in principle, makes sense for all lambda tilde and even though n equal 4 is weakly coupled. Then you could ask what kind of theory does this correspond to? And for large n, we have a very precise answer. So we take the planar limit and focus on the single trace sector. Then we can look at the single trace operators like we can look at them as a spin chain, where we just have spin up and spin down, since we're in the SU2 sector. And then the spin chain corresponding to this have this Hamiltonian here. And this is precisely the Hamiltonian of the ferromagnetic Heisenberg spin chain. So for planar n equal 4, the behavior is like a ferromagnetic spin chain. And if in terms of partition functions, the more precise dictionary is like this, where this is the partition function of n equal 4, and this is the partition function of the ferromagnetic Heisenberg spin chain without a magnetic field, I would say. So we obtain the Heisenberg model as a limit of weakly coupled planar n equal 4.
Do you have explicit expression for partition function on the XXX model?
Well, in some limits, yeah, for large and small temperatures, you do, yeah.
Or even an infinite product.
Sorry?
Maybe in the form of an infinite product.
I'll come back to that, so maybe I can address the question there. I should say that that's also a sort of a non-thermal version of the limit, so you can do the limit directly in terms of the energies and arc charges of n equal 4, like this, where you don't involve the temperature at all. So the sector we find in n equal 4 can also be found just in terms of the spectrum of n equal 4. I mean, it's not just something that occurs thermodynamically, but it's really a particular subsector of the theory. And a strange or funny feature of all this is that we obtain a decoupled sector, which is purely bosonic, even though it's from a supersymmetric theory. Another interesting feature is, of course, you can compare this with a PP wave type limit, and it's clear that this is a very different type of limit, since here we take the the archives to be fixed and an end to be fixed, whereas in the PP wave limit, you just take them to go to infinity. Okay, so now we found this connection between gauge theory and Heisenberg's spin chain, and then we want to use this to understand better what happens in the gauge theory. So let's try to find the low energy part of the spectrum for finite length of tilde. And the spectrum, well the vector of the spectrum corresponds to the states with d2 equals 0. And then the excitations correspond to the magnums of the spin chain. And if we first look at the vector, then if we define this as the total spin of the spin chain, then it's clear that there exists a vacuum for each value of SZ. And that we can write up these vector and they look like this. And in fact, these vector are precisely the chiral primaries in the SU2 sector. So the vacuum of the spin chain corresponds to the chiral primaries of the SU2 sector. So that also means that the spectrum we will obtain will be states that lie close to the chiral primaries. So what are the low energy excitations? So we have to solve this eigenvalue problem, and for that we can use the beta MZ techniques. I won't say much about this, but you write up an ansatz for the general state like this, and then you put in some impurities, which are here these actions of SZ on a different side of the chain, and then you can solve for the spectrum using the Beeansens technique. So in the end, what you obtain is a spectrum like this. So what you can note here is that this really looks a lot like a string spectrum, even though, of course, we are in weakly coupled Young-Mills theory. And in fact, in a not so long time, I'll find the same spectrum from the string theory point of view. But before that, I also want to discuss what we can say about the Hagedorn temperature from the point of view of the spin chain. So if we look at the partition function and define this V of t as being the large L limit, I mean, L here is the length of the spin chain, so it's equal to J1 plus J2, as we say. So this is the thermodynamic limit of the partition function of the Heisenberg spin chain. So that we define as V of t, and then you actually have that the free energy of the Heisenberg spin chain is equal to minus t times V of t. So it's a well-defined object that we are working with. So if we use this, then we can rewrite this partition function up here, because we see that this part here is approximately equal to that. So this means that so if we take n equal 1, we can see that there is a singularity when beta tilde is equal to V of this. Because there appears a singularity. And this is precisely the Hagedorn singularity. So said in another way, using this argument, we can find a general connection between the thermodynamics of the Heisenberg spin chain in the thermodynamic limit in terms of this function here, and the Hagedorn temperature of the gauge period by this expression, which is formulated in this expression here. So what can that tell us about the Hagedorn temperature? So we quickly see that large lambda tilde corresponds to low temperatures in the spin chain, and small lambda tilde to high temperatures. So if you look at the high temperature limit, then V of T is actually known to very high order in 1 over T. It has expanded in 1 over T. And this has been obtained from this integral equation here. So if we, for example, expand it to fifth order, then we can get the Hagedorn temperature to fifth order in lambda tilde. And this is very neat because, I mean, we tried to obtain this term, and this is already, if you don't, without this connection with the spin chain, this is already hard to obtain by itself. But if you exploit the connection to the spin chain, then it's extremely easy to find these corrections.
That's right.
Yeah.
Didn't only know that connection towards that lambda tilde?
No. It truncates, so it's an exact Hamiltonian. There's no higher.
There are no possible corrections to meet.
No, because in the decoupling limit you take lambda to go to zero, so there's no non-perturbative corrections or anything like that, because if you take the weak coupling limit. So as you say that this has been obtained, I think there's a condensed matter paper where this is obtained to order T, 1 over T to the 50, but it would look bad on the transparency device then, I think. So
if these two have all gotten to order 50, then probably there is some exact expression, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I don't understand why they didn't try to make a recursion relation or something, but it doesn't seem that
surely
that Yeah. Okay, so what is more interesting for us is the low temperature limit. This exact expression has been obtained. So it goes like square root of the temperature. And that gives this Hagedorn temperature. So the Hagedorn temperature is proportional to lambda tilde to the 1/3. And this you can either look up in a condensed matter paper by Takahashi, or you can compute it directly from the low energy state. In fact, you can also find the correction to this, also computed by Takahashi, and this gives a correction to the Hagedorn temperature. There should be higher corrections as well. But it's not known how to match low and high temperatures for the spin chain. But in any case, this is enough for our purpose. So this tells us how the Hagedorn temperature behaves for large lambda tilde. And this will eventually be the Hagedorn temperature we match to the string theory side. So let's now look at the string theory, unless there's questions to the gauge theory before I go on. Okay. So how can we implement all this on the string theory side? If we look at the dual string theory, then we have this dictionary between the string theory quantities, so the spring tension and the spring coupling and the gauge theory quantities, which are the tooth coupling and M. Then we can take the non-thermal version of our decoupling limit and then directly translate it into a limit of the string theory for strings in ADS5 with S5. And that gives this limit here. So you can notice here that this implies that the spring tension should go to zero in the limit and the spring coupling should go to zero in the limit, while the angular momenta for the strings should be held fixed. So in other words, it's a zero string tension, zero string coupling limit. And if we in particular consider the free string theory corresponds to large N on the gauge theory side, and we have this sort of triality between the ferromagnetic Heisenberg spin chain, the decoupling limit of N equal 4, and this decoupling limit of strings on ADS5 versus 5. And as I will show you, or I don't remember if I will show you, but one can easily see that this relation between the string coupling and the tooth coupling, the spring tension and the tooth coupling, reduces to this effective relation between the effective spring coupling, the effective spring tension and the effective tooth coupling, where the string tension is defined as this. So it's a little bit like we get a mini version of ADS CFT in this decoupling limit. We want now to connect to the PP waves, since it's only for the PP waves we can hope to compute the Heisenberg temperature. So we should also think about how the correspondence works for a large R charge. So we should take some Penrose limit of ADS5 versus 5 that works well with the decoupling limit that we have. And I guess I will not go into so much detail with that, but we are led to consider a Penrose limit that results in the following PP wave background. This is, in fact, the same PP wave as in BMN. It's just expressed in different coordinates. But the special thing about these coordinates is that the x1 direction is a flat direction. J here is instead of being just one of the R charges, J is equal to J1 plus J2 instead. So you get a different PP wave limit than normally. So if you look at the spectrum, for this PP wave, it's like this, with some complicated level matching condition, and F and omega n are defined as, I think, as usual in the PP wave literature. So this is nice, but we should somehow explain why this is related to what we want to do. So why is this the right PP wave? And the answer is that if you look at the vacuum states, so the states for which the light cone Hamiltonian is zero, then that corresponds using this Penrose limit here. You can see that corresponds to having E equals J. This is precisely what is mapped to the chiral primaries of the SU2 sector. So the vacuum of the PP wave is the same as the vacuum that we had before in the gauge theory. So this makes us believe that this is the right PP wave to study. Also, if you look at how many vacua there are, there you can see that there's a vacuum for each value of P1. And what is P1? That's the momentum along the x1 direction. And this is precisely this precisely corresponds to having a vacuum for each value of S, which precisely we had on the Gibbs Curie side. So the vacuum structure resembles the structure we had on the Gibbs Curie side. But now we want to implement the decoupling limit for the PP wave. And this can be done as a large mu limit, the following. And then you can check the spectrum, and you can check that only the modes where there's this MN number operator survives, since F goes to infinity. And for these modes, you can see that this factor reduces to N squared over 2N. And the fact that anything can survive this limit is essentially because we have this flat direction. So there's some kind of geometrical way of understanding that you can take this limit and you can get a finite spectrum after the limit. So in any case, the spectrum, the resulting spectrum after the decoupling limit is this. And this is precisely what we had before in the Gibbs Curie, which we can compare with the right stuff here also using this relation. So we find this precisely the same spectrum as in the Gibbs Curie.
In the paper where we live, then you need to take the two coupling blocks, while in the other case we're taking the two coupling blocks.
Yeah, so what we do here is to I mean, for the PP wave limit, you should take large J and large R, since then geometrically you get that the strings effectively move like in the PP wave background. What we imagine doing is then to take a very, very, very large J, arbitrarily large, and then keeping it fixed when we take our decoupling limit. So we don't take J to infinity, and we don't take R to infinity, but we take it to be so large that the corrections corresponding to, say, 1 over J corrections are suppressed. Then there's a number of considerations that one should take into account to see that by taking our decoupling limit, you don't go out of the regime of validity again. But that seems to hold, I mean. But for example, if you want to stay in the regime of validity of the PP wave, you should have the energy. Like E minus J should be small or finite. But in fact, we take E minus J to go to zero. So, whereas if you would start considering states with energies very, very high above J, then you would go away from the PP wave regime. But we in fact take E minus J to go to zero. So we stay in the regime of validity of the PP wave.
The question is, why is it limit the field theory, I mean, the meta corresponds to the field theory limit to before? If you look at a limit in the field theory, the question is, why is this the correct?
Yes, yeah, so
the limit string is
better. Which limit? This one?
No, so you did something in the field theory,
yeah,
and you get a consistent limit and the discussion stays. Now you want to understand what the limit corresponds to the string theory is.
Yeah.
I'm still not clear why it is the right limit today.
So this limit here, which is the limit on the PP wave side, that you can get using these currents here and this limit here. So you can take this limit, which is the direct translation of a limit for strings on ADS, and then use the currents here, and then after a little bit of algebra, you obtain that limit. I don't know if that's what you mean.
I'm not sure why the filter limit has to go to the PP wave.
Yeah, okay. So it doesn't have to go to the PP wave. There's a more general correspondence working here. But my point is that if we look at states which has very, very large J and very, very large N, then we can approximate the ADS geometry by the PP wave geometry and then take out decoupling here. So I mean, there's a more general story, of course, but if we just take, I mean, if we take large J, then we don't have to consider the full ADS 5 versus 5 metric. We only have to consider the PP wave. So, like it's an easier regime to work with, so, since we don't know how to quantize ADS.
Maybe
I'll
ask a little bit.
Sorry?
Maybe I'll ask a little bit.
Okay, so so now we can compute the Hagedorn temperature from the string theory side. And this is really, well, you can either take the compute the partition function using this reduced spectrum that we found, and then the partition function looks like this, and then you can easily find that the Hagedorn temperature becomes that, and this matches precisely the Hagedorn temperature in the gauge theory. Of course, at this point, it's not so surprising since we already matched the spectrum. But what you can also do is to make a consistency check on this and see that instead of first taking the decoupling limit of the spectrum and then finding the Hagedorn temperature, you can instead look at the general expression of the Hagedorn temperature and then take the decoupling limit directly of the Hagedorn temperature. So if we take the full PP wave spectrum, then the Hagedorn singularity is defined by this equation, where A and B are defined here. And if we use now the limit, which restricts us to taking A and B like this, we again find the same Hagedorn temperature as this. This shows that that the limit is consistent on the PP wave. So that's a sort of a commutativity of the limits. So we have matched the spectrum and the Hagedorn temperature of weakly coupled gauge theory and free string theory in a subsector of ADS CFT, and then it's natural to ask why this could work. On the gauge theory side, it's really because we can consider lambda tilde to be large, because that corresponds to looking at states near chiral primaries, and this is the feature that makes it possible to ignore most of the states of the SU2 sector and zoom in only on the states which are close to the chiral primaries, which are these magnum states. And on the string theory side, the nice feature was that we found the PP wave with the same vectron structure as the gauge theory side. And all this can be understood either as the matching of the spectrum or the matching of the thermal partition function. So, which one you prefer is, I guess, if you prefer the non-thermal or the thermal version of the matching. Okay, so in conclusion, so we have found this decoupling limit of n equal 4, where the partition function simplifies and all states decouple except for the states in the SU2 sector. This just gives a well-defined theory for all lambda tilde and n. And for large n in particular, we can relate the physics of the gauge theory to the physics of the Heisenberg model in a precise way. This means that we have found a manifestly integrable decoupled sector of planar n equal 4. So I think this is nice since we actually show that part of n equal 4 is really integrable. It's also a very physical thing to look at because it describes the physical, the physics of n equal 4 near a certain critical point. And then one could, I think, develop the same thing for the SU2-3 sector. But if we instead turn to AUCFT, then we have that the dual limit corresponds to a zero string tension, zero string coupling limit of type B string theory on AUS5-5. And if we look at the planar limit of zero string coupling, then we have this solvable sector of AUCFT. I call it solvable because of the Heisenberg spin chain possibility. And this gives us this triality of three different theories. It has, as I showed you, you have explicit matching of the spectrum and Hagelin temperature for large, for very long spin chains. So the future directions, I think there's many future directions, but one could, for example, study the Hagedorn transition on the gauge theory side. This, I personally think, is very interesting because this could, since you now have a match between gauge theory and string theory, and you can also study the gauge theory side at you can study 1-hour n corrections on the gauge theory side. You could in fact hope to understand the precise structure of the phase transition on the gauge theory side, and that should tell us how the Hagedorn phase transition works on the string theory side, if you believe in AUCFT. Another thing is to look at the lambda corrections to the spectrum and thermodynamics. This is interesting because there's this three-loop discrepancy in the study of integrability of n equal 4. One hope could be to study these lambda corrections could explain why there's a match of the spectrum at two loops but not at three loops in this for the spectrum found in the integrability literature. So another thing one could look at is the one more lambda tilde corrections on the string side. I think that should correspond to looking at say 1/j corrections to the spectrum on the PP wave side. So it should correspond to doing finite side corrections on the spin chain side and to going away from the PP wave limit on the string theory side. So this I think should be interesting to start. The SU2-3 sector. I think is interesting because it's not really clear to me which PP wave one should study there, but there's a slightly more structure in the SU2-3 sector because you have both bosons and fermions, and for example this lambda to the, well, the lambda to the three half terms could also come in, the one you asked about. Okay, so that's the end.
Comments for this three loop discrepancy in terms of dilatation operator, it comes at what, a lambda square?
Lambda cube.
Lambda cube.
Yeah.
There is no problem at lambda square.
No, no. They find dimension at lambda square. But, I mean, they work in terms of this parameter lambda prime there, which is, I think, lambda or J squared. So, and then they work at large lambda and large J. So one of the reasons why we think we can say something new about this is that we instead really take the weak tooth coupling. So we have for us that would be a reason that the two sides should match, whereas in what they do, they do the, I mean, on the gauge theory side, they take small tooth coupling, while on the string theory side, they take large tooth coupling, and then try to match what they get in this. So there's not any a priori reason why it should match.
Any more questions? Oh, that's unsticker again.